Hi, this is Michael Waits, and welcome back to Globe Change. Globe Change is a Uniglow podcast in collaboration with Next Step and Michael Waits Media. Uniglow is Thailand's first student-run organization. They provide university application and just other insights through events and its online platform. They're really there just to help students. It's by students, for students, to help students understand the process of getting into university, among other things. Next Step, another partner, is an advanced experiential learning organization based in Asia. They provide internships, study abroad programs, and learning expeditions for high school students, university students, and businesses. And we actually do another podcast that we call Future Leaders, where we talk to students that go through the internship program. That's actually pretty interesting as well. Globe Change itself is a podcast that features stories of accomplished and inspiring Southeast Asian high school graduates. Do you feel any pressure now, Yasmin? That are now in colleges. You do, right? That are now in colleges and universities across the globe. And on this episode, I'm joined by Yasmin Nguyen. Yasmin, how are you?
Hey, I'm great. It's so nice to be here. Thank you.
It's awesome to have you here as well. Where are you from anyway?
Oh my gosh, that is such a complex question. I guess I always try and paint as full a picture as possible. So ethnically, I'm Chinese, Vietnamese, Chinese, Cantonese. Legally, I hold an Australian passport because my dad was a refugee during the Vietnam War and he sought asylum in Australia. And then culturally, I'm Thai, I guess, because I've grown up in Thailand. I was born in Thailand. I went to school in Thailand. But then again, I went to an international school. So I would say that I was in a bubble of Thai society.
Yeah. So are you a Thai speaker?
Yes, I am. Not fluent to the level where I can become an academic professor, but fluent to the level where I can have conversations with people and learn things in Thai.
But like in your day-to-day life, whether that means getting into a taxi or going into, you know, talking to people that are street vendors or street food, you're indifferent, right? Like you just speak Thai in a way that they can completely understand.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Easy, right?
Yeah.
No, it's important though, right? Because so a lot of people talk about fluency. I think fluency, particularly for people that are multilingual, is a dream that people have, right? So I speak Japanese probably the way you speak Thai. And when I'm in Japan and I talk to people on the street or people in a taxi, I speak it naturally. I don't know if I call myself fluent either, but I don't apologize for the level at which I speak, right? And I don't think people should. And I think you're right. This idea of where you're from, I think, is complex for everybody. And I think it's important to note that, right? Even me, I consider myself like a third culture adult. Think about this. I do, though. It's weird, right?
And I think I'm a third culture kid through and through.
But you are, though, easily, right? So all the things that you explained, like there's nuance to every single bit of that, right? That takes a lot of time to explain for people that really care. But even for me, like I'm not what I look like I am. Right. So I was born in the United States, but my entire adult life has been in Asia. I'm not really Asian, but I'm not really American either. Because I was 24, right? So it's weird, I think.
And it's such a complex question because I guess traditionally with the ideas of nation states, you strongly connect where you're from with your race and your religion. But nowadays, these things can be more separate. And I feel like that's a very interesting trajectory we're going down.
Right. And look, like your name denotes Vietnam.
And yet
it doesn't really mean that today, right? Like my name kind of denotes something too, maybe Eastern European, but I've never even been in Eastern Europe, right?
Yeah.
So I find that really tricky. And when I was talking to sort of Paul Keen last week, right, his mother's American, his father's British, he was born here. He's not really attached to any particular nation or nation state at all either. And I think that's actually really interesting. I think it makes this generation of, I'm going to say kids, and I don't mean that derisively, I mean that respectfully, but I think it's important, right? I think this generation of kids is just different. And I think it's going to continue to be that way, right?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely really exciting. And I wonder what the implications of this are for, you know, like national conflicts and disputes, like presuming that we all get to positions of power or where we're in charge of things.
I think you make a really good point, right? In other words, so your passport is Australian and yet you didn't grow up in Australia. So where are your allegiances, right? In other words, when people start saying bad things about Australian politics or the Australian government or just Australian people, do you fight back or do you agree? Do you know what I mean? Do you agree? Or since you grew up in Thailand and that's your home, do you defend Thailand Or do you become like Swiss and you just sit in the middle and say, you know, I'm neutral? It's
I mean, I
tricky.
would definitely say that I do have some opinions. But regarding Australian politics, I don't know too much to really comment. But
Right?
then I am trying to learn because I do feel that responsibility, I guess, because I have to vote when I'm older. And, you know, I might settle there later just because with having an Australian passport, I'm entitled to rights and privileges in Australia. So, like at the start of my year here, I attended a talk by Tony Abbott, which was extremely interesting and definitely shaped my view of Australian politics. And in
Fair
2 weeks, I'm
enough.
going to listen to Malcolm Turnbull, who I think
Right.
was the guy who followed him. So, yeah, it's just interesting. Just trying to learn as much as I can. And essentially, all countries and politics are connected. So, learning as much as you can about any country, you'll be bound to learn about the country that you're hoping to learn about anyway.
Agreed, agreed. Look, let's back up a little bit. Where did
Yeah,
you
sure.
end up? Where did you end up going? You said you went to international school, right? So where did you go to school?
I went to school in Bangkok. I went to
Right.
Shrewsbury International School.
But did you go to Shrewsbury the entire time? Because Shrewsbury's relatively new in Bangkok, no?
It was founded in 2003, so I
Okay, so
was
not that
there.
new. You were there the whole
Not,
time.
well, yeah, I moved there in year two.
Yeah, so fair enough. That's good enough for
Yeah, basically
me.
my whole like life that I remember.
Yeah, let's not get super pedantic about like I was in kindergarten somewhere else, right? So, but and Shrewsbury is actually, and I don't know how this works in Thailand, right? But I don't want to say an affiliate or a friend, like I don't know how it works, but Shrewsbury is actually the namesake of a school that's also in the UK, right?
Yes, Shrewsbury School in the UK. It's like a big public school, public in the sense that it's private. I don't know, it's a British thing.
I know, right? Because we were talking about this offline, right? And we'll get to some of the statistics you were talking about for the particular college that you attend, where, you know, 96% of the kids are from some particular place, right? But
Yeah.
this whole public-private thing still confuses me as somebody who went through the American school system, right? A public school in England means that it's difficult to get into, probably more expensive and more elite. Is that fair? I don't know.
Yes, a lot more elite and traditionally tied very closely to notions of class and
Right.
status and power.
Interesting. Really interesting. Anyway, okay, and you grew up in Bangkok, yeah?
Yes.
So what's the process like for graduating from Shrewsbury, and then do most of the kids that go to Shrewsbury actually end up in university in the UK somewhere?
I don't have the exact statistics, but well, almost everyone graduates. Like, I think one person, no, almost everyone goes to university. I think one person didn't go to university, but he's pursuing a gap year.
Right.
I'd say around, like, I don't know, like 30, 40% go to the UK, 30, 40% go to America, and the rest stay in Thailand. Though there are a couple in, like, Japan and China, but it's very UK, US. But actually, no, interestingly, in my year group, there's about 10 students who went to Australia. So,
Oh,
yeah,
wow.
all over the world.
Is there a view internally, meaning amongst the students? I'm kind of indifferent about what the institution feels. But amongst the students about taking a gap year?
Taking a gap here.
Yeah, like do kids talk about it at all?
Yeah, I mean, actually, a couple of people, like, no, a few, like three or four, are taking a gap year. But then, like, they're going to university for sure afterwards.
Right.
I don't think anyone is particularly against the concept or for the concept, but obviously it's something that's very individual to whoever's making the decision. And
Right.
for example, I know that a lot of my Australian friends, they're doing like half a gap year simply because the school term ended in July and then university starts in March. So they've kind of had that gap year. Yeah, but it's definitely increasing in popularity, I think, as students realize the benefits that can be gained just by learning through travel and, you know, being an adult, because going to an international school in a city like Bangkok, you're often in a bubble and you know,
You
you're in a
think?
bubble, like, yeah, for sure. And going on a gap year has allowed many students to like work jobs like in cafes, in restaurants, in hotels. And yeah, I think it's a good experience.
Let me share a story with you of a conversation that I overheard among a few students that attend one of the international schools in Thailand. Okay? There were a few kids sitting around a table, and one of them was, I'll say, going home, and I'll put that in quotes, right? One of the young ladies was going to the United States where her parents are American citizens, and she was going to attend a private school in her new residence. And she had grown up in Thailand or outside the United States, right? So she was going home nominally, but had never really lived in the US. And these kids were sitting there talking, and they were like, "Oh, yuck, you're going to have to go to private school. Just a bunch of rich, self-entitled kids." Right? You see where this is going, right? And I'm quiet, or I'm just listening, right? So I'm sitting at the same table, and I'm listening because I'm really interested. And I think this gets to the point of the bubble that you were talking about, where if you exist in a particular situation and in a particular environment, you don't know actually what it is that you're in. And I kind of piped in a little bit just after I let them talk, and I said, "Well, what do you think the school is that you attend?" And they were like, "Oh, it's just a regular school in Bangkok." And I was like, "Okay, but you do realize that it's also private, right?" The point is, they didn't know. And I think that gets to the point of the bubble that you were talking about. And I think it brings up the reason why I'm bringing this up is because I do think that the transition between regular high school, whether it's public high school or private high school in your own country, or an international school in a country that's not necessarily your own, and again, that's complicated by what we talked about earlier. And then that transition into university, whether it's in the UK or in Europe or in the United States or Australia, it doesn't really matter. But that transition's really hard. And that's why I asked about the gap year as well. Because if you're graduating from high school as an 18-year-old or a 19-year-old, you're asked to make a ton of really important decisions, and you may not know what the right answers are, right?
Yeah, for sure. For
So
sure.
how did you find that transition?
To university. Well, I guess I didn't expect it to be as hard as I thought that that actually turned out being. Because I was like, oh yeah, I go to an international school. I'm used to being in a different culture and everything. But then you come to university and you begin to realize that the international school culture is actually a very unique culture. And having that experience doesn't exactly make it easy for you to assimilate into other cultures. So being here in the UK, it may have been because my college is very British, so it's not very international. It was interesting having to come to terms with my race, my privilege, having the international school status, and yeah, I guess like the classic like rediscovering yourself crisis ensued. Yeah, regarding race, I think because I'm Asian and I look Asian, whatever that means.
Right.
When I came here, being a minority was very interesting because growing up in Asia, even though I wasn't Thai ethnically, you look Asian, so you're part of the majority. And then suddenly here, you're part of the minority, and then you become very aware of your race. And this isn't necessarily a good thing or a bad thing, but it's just an interesting thing
Right.
to realize how you're perceived by the world and how that contributes to your perception of yourself. Because as I was saying earlier, when you're in a country where you're the majority, I don't think you think about this too much, especially when race is not as racially charged an issue as it is in the West. Yeah, and then secondly, on privilege, I guess this comes with living in the bubble, going to an international school. I feel like things like experiences and opportunities are so normalized. Like it was totally normal for people to, just go on holiday to Japan and then fly back, or get an internship at some really great firm, and then you come here, not to generalize my college, but you recognize that these are privileges. They're not experiences and opportunities afforded to everyone.
Everybody, right?
And yeah, and it's much harder to just be like spontaneously be like, oh yeah, let's go on holiday, because for some people they need to plan, and maybe they're on a scholarship which ties them down. Yeah, so that was very insightful, and I think my first term here, and the terms here are 8 weeks, so they're super intense, if you can imagine, like having this
Wow.
identity crisis, learning about yourself and writing 14 essays at the same time. You just don't stop. And then I remember going back home to Bangkok in December and like reflecting on my term and just being like, well, that was crazy. I don't know how I did it. Like
Don't
I
know how
feel
he
like I've
survived.
just like like shed my old skin and have emerged from the ashes as this new person. And I actually didn't really want to come back here because I was used to being comfortable in Bangkok. But then I came back here. I was homesick for a bit, but now I'm really happy. And I think that my experiences in the first term, however dramatic or crazy they may seem, actually have helped me a lot in being more comfortable in my own skin and kind of understanding who I am. Because I
Right.
feel in school, when you're just doing things in your day to day and you go home, you go to school, you don't really think that deeply. Oh,
Not
I
really,
didn't think
right?
that deeply about who I was as a person, what I represented, and the perceptions of me from others and from myself. And yeah, so
You didn't
I hope
have
that
to,
answers.
right? No, it's a great answer, and actually it brings up more questions. Think about the cycle. Let's just think about this cycle, right? So you said your dad went to Australia, right? So he's Vietnamese by birth, but
Yes.
after the war, during the war, essentially went to Australia. So he sticks out in Australia, right? In a way that you've had not experienced until you got to university. So he's deeply aware about what that's like, right? So he grew up in
Yeah,
an environment
exactly.
where, but just think about this sort of cyclicality and the circular like notion here. And then he moves to Asia, back to Asia, and you grew up in an environment where being Asian is just, it's normal.
Yeah.
And you don't even, it's not that you take it for granted, but you don't
You
even
don't
think
think
about
about
it.
it.
You're just
Yeah.
like, the way I look is just a result of who my parents are, and it doesn't define anything about me at all. You don't even think about it. You like you wake up every day, you look in the mirror, you brush your hair, whatever it is, you go to school. No one talks about it. And again, that's part of the international school experience. And I think in a way, I'm envious, right? Because that's a great thing. You exist with sort of 70 different nationalities, and because it's normal, you don't identify anybody. You don't say, oh, that person's from that country or this person's from that country. You're like, they're year 12. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. That hits
And
it
that's the
like,
big
yeah.
defining factor. You're like, ugh, I hate the year 11 kids because they're immature. Do you know what I mean? Not like
Yeah.
they're from France. It doesn't matter. And then you
Yeah.
get to the UK and you're like, oh my God, I'm actually really different than everybody, and I didn't even notice until somebody told me or they treated me differently. This happened to me,
Exactly.
right? When I lived in Japan for a long time, and I was a visual minority for the first time in my whole life, right? Because I'm just a Caucasian man. And it's
Yeah.
weird.
It really is.
It's really weird. And you did it in this sort of intense, like you said, 8 week environment of not only are you transitioning from, high school into university, but you're also switching countries. And then, like you said, like you were a little bit dismissive of yourself, going, oh, now I have to rediscover myself, kind of thing. But you really do, though. And that's hard.
Yeah, it is definitely really hard. But hey, I mean, I feel it was for the better and yeah, I'm much happier now, and I think that that whole experience has made me super interested in things like like post-colonialism and race and how
Yeah.
race is socially constructed and all these kinds of things, and I'm finding it really interesting, especially like with my course being so human-centric.
Right, so I want to talk about that in a second, but I do believe that the impact on your own ability to understand what sort of being a different race or being visually different than everybody else means, then it helps define how you perceive other people as well and helps you understand your own preconceived notions about others in a way that you would never have known unless you'd gone through it yourself. And I think if you go through it and come out the other side with a little bit more knowledge and a little bit more empathy, it's a good thing, regardless of how much it hurt when it happened, yeah.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Anyway, so what are you studying in this intense sort of 8 week
Yeah,
sprint? It sounds really hard. And where do you go to school? We didn't even talk
no.
about where you went to school, right? Where are you?
Oh, I'm at the University of Oxford.
I've heard of it.
Yeah, a part of it. Yeah, so sorry, I misheard. So it's actually a collegiate university, and what most people don't realize when they come here is that you don't have one campus like you
Right.
do in other countries. Rather, it's a city and like a ton of buildings scattered around the city, and these buildings are colleges, and these colleges are where you live, where you eat, and you'll have lessons in the forms of tutorials, which are two-on-one or one-on-one discussions with an academic where you discuss essays that you've written for that tutorial, and those happen either in your college or in other colleges. And then on top of that, you may have lectures, you may have labs, which are like practical work in the laboratory, or you may have classes. So it's pretty cool. I'm studying a course, a Bachelor of Arts in Human Sciences. It's a fairly new course. I think it was established in 1979 or 69, something like that. And it basically strives to understand the human condition from all possible perspectives. So we focus primarily on the natural sciences, biology. So we look at genetics, we look at evolution, we look at ecology, we look at physiology, as well as the social sciences. So in particular, sociology, which is the study of societies, anthropology, the study of human cultures. We look at human geography, in particular migration studies, which I find very
Right.
interesting. I
Fascinating,
guess because
right?
it's so intrinsic to my own experiences.
Right.
And then what else do we do? Well, we do a million things. Oh, we do statistics just because it's a useful skill to have if someone wants to work in the social sciences.
And Oxford is how many years? Is it 4 years? Is it 3 years?
My course is 3 years, but I know that the hard sciences, their courses are 4 years long. The mine is 3 years.
And do you find, so the whole tutorial system, right, which is this sort of two-on-one discussions that you have, like you said, based on the essays that you're writing, it's very different than the way you were educated at Shrewsbury, I'm presuming, and definitely different than the way the kids are educated at the other international schools in Bangkok. Does that take a while to get used to, and is that super intense as well? And how do you feel like that is from a teaching and learning perspective? There's a lot to
I
unpack there,
really
but I'm
like it.
curious.
Yeah.
Yeah, go
I
ahead.
really like the tutorial system because so the way it works is like maybe at the start of no, yeah, at the start of the term, your tutor will assign you a list of essays that you'll have to write that term and the reading lists for each of those essays, which are usually 10 to 15 articles and books long, and you pick maybe six, five or six to read. Critically, and then you write that essay, and then you'll hand it in the day before the tutorial, and then in the tutorial you'll have a discussion about that essay or that topic more broadly. Personally, I really, really enjoy this system of learnings, especially in the social sciences, just because there's so much room for discussion, and it's so interesting because you argue your point of view, whether like consciously or subconsciously, very strongly, and then your two partners. The other person in your tutorial will also have their own argument, and then your tutor will kind of facilitate this discussion, this argument between you guys, and you learn a lot more about your own views, and you start to question your own views, and you might also question their views, and then you can argue with them, and you can talk to them, and you can ask some questions, and I just think that it's a very, very unique experience being able to have these intimate discussions with people who are leading the research in their field. So, for example, in one of my anthropology tutorials, we were learning about witchcraft, and my tutor actually has done a lot of work with tribes in the Sahara Desert, and then she was telling us about her experiences, and it's just very interesting because suddenly the knowledge and the content isn't so far away from you like it was in high school, where you're
Right.
just reading about distant researchers and distant places, and suddenly it's very close to you, and you can interact with the professors that you are receiving tutorials from. And even more than that, because it's so intimate, they're willing to help you and to help you further your interests and develop what you already know. So, for example, in my anthropology tutorial, just because I really like anthropology, we were talking about Thailand for a little bit, and like the Thai perspective of things or how things are done in Thailand. And my tutor partner, she's from England, so she was giving her perspective. And then after the tutor, I was talking to my tutor and I was like, hey, I'm really interested in Thailand. Do you have any direction you can point me in? And then she pointed me to this Italian academic who, I think he's at a different college. Yeah, he's at a different college. I just emailed him. And he does a lot of research on Thailand and mobility in Thailand, and very interestingly on the role of motorbike taxi drivers in Thailand. And so I reached out to him, and we're meeting next weekend to talk about Thailand. So I just think that these kinds of opportunities are so great, because it's really you, the student, who directs the work. And oh, and one more thing, because these essays aren't graded in the sense that they don't contribute to your final grade, you're really free to explore, and you're not following some rubric like to get this grade, you need to do this. You're just writing and exploring. And I think that that is such an amazing opportunity to have, especially when you're this young, and this early on in your career, the ability to explore your ideas completely and without fear of getting a bad grade.
Yeah, again, I'm not ignoring. I'm just trying to process all this information. I'm always slightly envious when I feel like somebody's going through a learning experience where there's just so much benefit, right? Because I wish I could have gone through that same process. I love this idea that the writing is exploratory, right? It's not definitive. In other words, you're not getting graded on that per se, but what you're really doing is just trying to explore not just the readings that you've been given, but your own ideas and constructs around the reading, what you've learned, what you're gaining from doing that, and then going back and forth. I like to, how you said with your toot, right? With your tutor. I love the abbreviations of things that people take for granted, and also your partner as well. Like that whole process is really interesting. And if you think about the way the rest of your life is going to be lived, that experience of being able to sort of defend, but also to grow your own perspective by doing research and reading. ends up being super important, it seems to me, and super powerful. And you'll see that, I think, over time. Like you'll feel very different, I believe, and you probably feel different now. But after doing that for 3 years, you'll feel like, okay, give me any topic, give me any perspective. I can argue both sides, and I can learn more as I go along. And that seems really cool to me.
Yeah, actually, that was the key reason that I really wanted to go to Oxford, this ability to think. Like, it sounds so stupid, but I just wanted to know how to think properly and how to argue and how to articulate, because I feel like I don't know what I want to do post-university. And the best way that I can equip myself for, like, any career that I'd want to have or any life that I'd want to live is with skills, and particularly skills that are so important to everyday human communication, whether on a personal level or in a corporate setting, because at the end, we're all just humans trying to find our way in the world. That's the most human science-y thing I've ever said.
Yeah, and it's actually true. And look, I think a lot about what educational institutions should provide to students. And I think if you come out with nothing else, you should learn how to learn. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But at its core, you should learn how to learn. In other words, I always say, in simplistic terms, learning the math is the easy part, but learning the context in which the math exists is the hard part, right? And that's what I mean when I say learning to learn. You're like, okay, I know this thing, but what does that thing mean?
Why
is it relevant, right? And I think that that's kind of the exposure and the experience that you're getting there. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yep, definitely.
So do you have time? It almost sounds like you wouldn't have time, but do you have time to do things sort of extracurricularly? And if you do, like, what have you chosen to do that's new for you, if that makes sense?
Okay. So firstly, I'll talk about time. Something that I really like that I didn't mention with the tutorial system is, well, for me anyway, my director of studies, so he's the person who manages this whole crazy tutorial system for me. He gives us the names of the tutors, and then it's up to us to schedule with them when we want our tutorials. So it could be like every other week, every week. So I really like how that's independent, because it kind of allows you to plan your time and, you know, still make time for the things you enjoy. Or like, I know that I'm going to be traveling to London this weekend, so then I purposely made sure that I didn't have any tutorials next Monday, so I wouldn't have to work over the weekend. So you can really plan your life. And I feel like that's something that's very special and cool, because you feel like a real adult, you know, like scheduling. So regarding time, because the tutorials are only 1 hour each, and you might only have one or two or maybe three, but usually two a week, you do have a lot of time if you can get all your work done, like the prep work. So I do a whole bunch of stuff. I would say I'm definitely not the norm in my experience, because most people just tend to like to focus on like one thing. So they're like heavily into drama or heavily into sport, but I'm kind of all over the place just because I enjoy a lot of things. So I'll start with Oxblog. So I'm part of this access project called the Oxblog Project. It's actually something that was founded by a student, I think, a decade ago. And now it's expanded into this this huge thing where every year a new group of vloggers, so people who make videos, take over the channel, and then they will post videos about their everyday life, about the Oxford student experience. They'll talk about life here, getting into Oxford, what the workload is like, basically trying to give a more human face to the institution that is Oxford. Because we can't deny that when you think about Oxford, you think about this like this very imposing elite place where people don't live, but people just study, and you kind of forget about the lived experiences of the people here. So Oxlog tries to widen access in humanizing Oxford. So I've done videos. I've only done two videos so far, but I've done one on the interview experience, just giving tips ahead of the interview process. And also I did a video with one.
Sorry, interview for getting into the school?
For getting in, yes. Because,
okay, cool.
You don't just submit your grades. You have to have an interview with your tutor, like someone who would potentially be your tutor, because the tutors are looking for people that they would like to teach and who can thrive in this intense setting. Anyway, Yes, I did a video on that. And then I have a friend who is a visiting student here at Oxford. So we did a video together about the visiting student experience and how this differs from like the experience of a real Oxford student. And because she's visiting from the US, we also talked about the differences between the UK and the US system. Just because I know that a lot of my friends in the US are considering coming here, and I feel it's important to get firsthand information from people who are actually doing the programs that they're hoping to go on. So that's Oxblog. I also write part-time for this student magazine called Phaser. We're a music, art, and style magazine. I write in the music column. I only write maybe two or three articles a term, but it's really cool. I get to write playlists. I get to write album reviews sometimes. I haven't done this, but I know some of the other writers have gone to concerts and have interviewed people performing. So it's really nice being a part of this magazine. And because Oxford life is so spread out because of the college system, so there is no one campus, we actually haven't had a proper team meeting. So it's all online, which I find really cool. Like my editor will just send me the dates, like, hey, Yasmin, you need to send me an article on these dates. You can write about whatever you want, but here are some pointers. And then I just work on it in my own time. So I feel very independent. Finally, oh no, I have two more things actually. Two more things, yeah. So I'm part of Oxford Women in Consulting, which is a student group where we try and increase female representation in consulting. I work as the head of events. This is something that I just recently joined, but it's a fairly new organization, which is why I think I was able to, become head of events within a term and a half. And we strive to hold events such as panel discussions with leading firms as well as with smaller boutique firms to demonstrate how consulting isn't just the big financial firms, but you can be in like healthcare consulting or fashion consulting or marketing consulting. And then we also hold weekly case study workshops, which I lead sometimes and some of my other team members lead, where we just do case study practices because often for women, a comment that they get is that they're not as assertive or aggressive or quick thinking as men. Basically, yeah, so I don't know how I feel about that, but we just want to ensure that women have as much practice as they need in an in more informal settings that can prepare them for these case study interviews.
So what do you think the significance is of having a group dedicated to, women in, and I'm going to leave the in blank, right? Because it could be women in consulting, it could be women in law, it could be women in sport, it could be women in anything, right? But from your perspective as a young lady, what do you think the significance is of just having that group meet as often as they do and have the events that they do? Like, overall, what's the goal that you're trying to accomplish, and why do you think it's necessary?
Overall, I think that we can't deny that there is gender inequality in society, whether that be in employment or in the way people are treated. I would say that personally, I've been very lucky in that I don't often feel that my gender prevents me from doing what I want to do. But I think that the significance of these societies lies in the fact that they provide a safe space, or at least a comfortable space, for women to develop their interests, to explore their interests, and to be honest about what it is that may be putting them off joining these societies.
Right.
Especially, so the female societies at Oxford anyway tend to be in STEM or in the banking and finance industries. So there's like a woman in business, there's a woman in tech, there's a woman in women in I already said business. Yeah. Anyway, you get what I'm saying.
I
And
get it.
these industries, because they tend to be female dominated, by existing as these women's societies, they provide a safe space. And then additionally, because these societies often invite in employers or potential organizations that students might want to work in later in the future, I think the benefit of these societies is that they can tailor the discussions that occur with these organizations to kind of explore where females play a role in their organization, not in the patronizing way, but like, is there female representation in their company? What are they doing to increase representation or ensure equality? And I think that these are very important things.
I think they are too. Look, one of the things that I talk about when I talk about diversity as a broad topic is that it's not something you can bolt on later. In other
Yeah, for
words,
sure.
you can't hiring the first woman or hiring the first person of color or hiring the first person that's just different is actually the hardest thing you can possibly do. So it has to start at the beginning. And the reason why, from my perspective, is that it's an uncomfortable situation for even the most brilliant woman or the most charismatic person to join an organization that looks nothing like they look. You know what I mean? So you're so uncomfortable just walking in. Right. So you'd walk in the room and just say, you know what? I'm not comfortable here. I'm leaving. Even if they offer you something. So the idea is you can't bolt it on by just bringing people in. You have to start from the beginning. It has to be part of the initial culture. So I like the fact that at least this generation is starting to talk about this in a way that's meaningful, right? So it started at least in the United States in the 60s with sort of women's lib and feminism. And that's kind of a word, you and I talked about this a little bit offline, but I'd like to see this word actually come back a little bit because that's what it is, right? We talked about empowerment is a word I really don't like because it sounds like somebody's giving you something. And I don't think you can give somebody power. I think you can just take it away. I said that to you earlier. So yes. I like this idea of feminism. It's just like, I'm a woman, I'm proud, I'm strong, I'm smart, I can do anything kind of thing. And if it helps to have these groups of people that talk about it, then so be it, I think.
Yeah, and adding one more thing to what you were saying about feeling comfortable. I feel that these women groups are able to address things that you might not get in this a normal generic consulting society. So, for example, one of the other societies, Oxford Women in Business, ran an event on how to dress for interviews. And I feel that although this does reflect the sexist nature of dressing and the perceptions that do happen, it allows women to know how to navigate these waters practically. Because I don't think, well, I'm a female, but I don't presume that males have to think particularly intensely about how they're going to dress for an interview and the implications that certain articles of clothing may carry.
Have different meanings. Yeah, right? In other words, when I went to interview, I put on a blue suit, a white shirt, and a tie, and I never had two thoughts about it. That was it.
Yeah. So these kinds of events, even though, you know, they do reflect the fact that there are different perceptions of gender and, you know, what articles of clothing may imply, I do feel that they're useful, at least now in the current climate.
Yeah, I agree. Look, we've covered a ton of ground. And I really appreciate your time. I think now is probably the right time to end. I just really want to say thank you for taking the time to do this. What day is today? Is it Saturday? It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's Saturday.
It's so hard for me to keep track. Anyway, I really want to thank you for doing this again. And I look forward to when you come back. Hopefully we'll get to meet each other in person again if they have another event. It was great to chat.
Yeah, today. For sure. Thank you so much for having me here. I really enjoyed this, having this time to reflect on my own experiences as well. It's always useful.
Awesome.